Thursday, August 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a United Nations envoy warns of a potential Syrian government assault on Idlib province.
Close to 1 million people will be probably displaced, and probably many of them will be facing starvation.
A cholera epidemic has surged in 5 Algerian provinces, and a new film warns of the dangers of another Holocaust. It's all ahead. There are growing signs of an imminent assault by pro-government forces in Syria on the last remaining major rebel stronghold in northwest Idlib province. The possibility has prompted expressions of alarm. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned of a risk for a humanitarian catastrophe. The UN said an additional 700,000 Syrian civilians could be displaced, adding to the millions already uprooted by the 7-year conflict. Heather Nauert is a U.S. State Department spokeswoman.
What we are concerned about is not just a potential chemical weapons attack, but we're concerned about the threat, any kind of escalation of violence in Idlib. That would put civilians and civilian infrastructure in Idlib at risk. We have shared the concerns that we have about any potential offensive taking place. We've shared those concerns with the Russian government at many levels, from Secretary Pompeo to his counterpart, to Chairman Dunford, also to Secretary Mattis, National Security Advisor Bolton, and others. So we've made our position on that very clear. In addition to that, our new Syrian envoy, Ambassador Jim Jeffries, has discussed that as well with some of his counterparts.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov Wednesday referred to the militants in Idlib as a festering abscess. NATO said the Russian Navy is building up its presence in the Mediterranean. Moscow has provided Damascus crucial military support since intervening in September 2015. Iran's foreign minister, whose government has backed Syria with advisors and fighters, also held talks with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, with Syria high on the agenda. Turkey, which has backed rebels against President Bashar al-Assad, borders Idlib province and has forces there. Alam Payand is director of the Middle East Studies Center at Ohio State University. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this impending offensive is an ominous development.
Because there are almost 3 million people in Idlib, and it is bordering Turkey too. When they talk about the rebels, these are a group of people who are opposing Bashar al-Assad and his government, and they're opposing Russia's involvement, and they're opposing the Iranian involvement. So these are some of the groups who are nationalists. And there are some jihadi groups there too. So that's what their attack is now, not only on the jihadi and that what they call the terrorists, but some others that who are opposition. In the opposition areas of the, opposition to Bashar al-Assad. Close to 1 million people will be probably displaced, and probably many of them will be facing starvation. Other danger is that probably that the government is using chemical agents on those people.
That's what the U.S. State Department spokesperson expressed on Wednesday. Quote, we are concerned not just about a potential chemical weapons attack, but we're also concerned about any kind of escalation of violence that will put civilians and infrastructure at risk.
Yes. The amazing situation here is that there was in Kazakhstan's capital, Astana, there were these three guarantors, Russia, Turkey, and Iran. These three countries thought that they should avoid humanitarian catastrophe. Now the United Nations is concerned, and everyone else in that neighborhood, there is a huge concern that this kind of catastrophe probably will, in somehow, there will be a ripple effect of that in the neighboring countries. And the most important thing is that Russia is denying that the chemical agents are not used, and they're blaming the white helmet guys, those rescuers that who are very famous in the world, doing excellent job in taking care of the civilians and children and others that who are under the rebel of the bombardment by Russia, by Iran, by the Bashar al-Assad government. And now Russia is blaming these white helmet rescuers, just like the Soviet Union was denying in Afghanistan. Well, some of us that who have watched Russia, Soviet Union's involvement in Afghanistan, Russia used chemical agents, and finally they were blaming the Mujahideen and others in America and CIA and somehow deflecting that the Afghan government at that time, which is a pro-Soviet government of Afghanistan, they were using the chemical agents, and Russia and the Soviet Union was denying it.
There's a concern by Turkey, of course. This territory borders Turkey, and Turkey has a small force there. Could this disrupt the warming relations between Moscow and Ankara?
Yeah, it would. Turkey is already hosting 2.5 million Syrians, and there will be another wave of these people going to Turkey, and Turkey will suffer from that.
Alam Payan said it's clear Russia, Syria, and Iran are disregarding international calls for a political settlement and are choosing to pursue a purely military victory. He said it's vital to Moscow that Bashar al-Assad remain in power to ensure its naval base in Tartus is preserved. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. President Trump says the White House is a smooth-running machine with changing parts. A human rights group says Myanmar may have committed war crimes by blocking aid to displaced civilians. The United States extends its travel ban to North Korea, and Spain orders a mass deportation of African migrants. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers in Australia have found that an automobile's natural vibrations can make drivers sleepy, increasing the risk of what is called drowsy driving. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration found, in the United States alone, that drowsy driving was responsible for 72,000 crashes, 44,000 injuries, and 800 deaths in 2013. In a new study, researchers from RMIT University in Melbourne, Australia, detail evidence that normal automobile vibrations at frequencies between 4 and 7 hertz can affect a driver's concentration and alertness levels a mere 15 minutes after getting behind the wheel. The researchers made their findings after testing 15 volunteers in a virtual simulation of driving on a boring two-lane highway. They say that they want to increase the scope of their study to include a larger group of people. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Algeria confronts a cholera epidemic. The Cluster Munition Coalition says Syria, with Russia's support, remains the only country still using cluster munitions, a weapon that has been outlawed by most of the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since the treaty banning cluster munitions took effect 10 years ago, 103 states have joined and another 17 have signed on, but not yet ratified the convention. Syria, which is not party to the treaty, reportedly has been using cluster munitions since mid-2012, about 1 year after civil war broke out there. According to the Cluster Munition Coalition, Syria denies possessing or using such weapons. Mary Wareham of Human Rights Watch is editor of the Monitor publication. She says the use of both airdropped and ground-launched cluster munitions has increased since Russia joined Syrian military operations in 2015, but their use has fallen off this year.
And there's several reasons for that. One is that the territory held by the opposition forces has been shrinking in the past year. Most of the cluster munition attacks have been centered on Idlib. The cluster munition rocket attack a couple of weeks ago in Idlib that resulted in civilian casualties. And there's been use of airdropped cluster munitions in Douma and in other governorates.
The Monitor finds the Saudi Arabian-led coalition in Yemen continued to use cluster munitions in 2017. But Wareham says there's little evidence that such attacks have continued this year.
It does appear that in the case of Yemen, the stigmatization effort has had some impact. You've probably seen some of the efforts that have been undertaken to convince the Saudi Arabia-led coalition not to use cluster munitions, and I think that has paid off.
Authors of the report say parties to the convention have destroyed 99% of their stockpiles, ridding the world of more than 33,500 cluster munitions and more than 1.7 million submunitions that are part of these weapons systems. In 2017, the Monitor recorded 289 cluster munition casualties, a sharp decrease from the 971 in 2016. However, the Monitor adds the actual global total is probably much higher, as many casualties go unreported. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Algerian health authorities claim the situation is under control after a cholera epidemic in at least four provinces caused more than 60 confirmed cases of the disease and killed at least three people. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Residents in a village of Tipaza province are drinking water from a spring government officials claim is infected with the cholera virus. But residents protest the spring is safe to drink from and the government analysis is mistaken. A cholera outbreak has been confirmed in Tipaza, Blida, Algiers, and Buira provinces. More than 130 people have been hospitalized with suspected cases of cholera this month, and more than 60 cases were confirmed. At least three people have died, according to Algerian media. Algeria's health minister, Dr. Mokhtar Hezblaoui, recently said health officials have been doing their best to keep on top of the situation. He says since the disease was discovered, the health ministry has devised a strategy to come to grips with it and to stop it from spreading. Dr. Issam Edine Bou Youssef of the El Hadi Fliki Hospital Center, which treats infectious diseases in Algiers, told Al Hora TV hundreds of people have come to the hospital fearing they were suffering from cholera. He says patients must be quarantined and the disease isolated. He stresses his hospital has set up a specialized and isolated wing to treat patients while they recover once the disease has been confirmed. Bou Youssef says many people have been panicking, mistaking stomach ailments for cholera. Local media report consumers are buying up large quantities of mineral water. An old man who lives in the capital, Algiers, tells Al Hora TV he is afraid. He says, cholera is dangerous to me because it has killed and sickened a number of people, and he thinks that a large number of people who live in the area have been hit. Dr. Mohamed Gamari complained to a local TV station the media uncovered the cholera epidemic before the government did. He said doctors in Khazruna, where the disease was first detected, should have sounded the alarm when they noticed the unusual number of diarrhea cases. Pharmacies in Algiers have been selling large quantities of salts to treat diarrhea, while many people have been avoiding fruits and vegetables, which they fear may be contaminated by the cholera virus. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Tributes to the late U.S. Senator John McCain resumed Thursday with a memorial service in his home state of Arizona in Phoenix. McCain's friend, former Vice President Joe Biden, will speak at the service. On Wednesday, lines of people waited to pay respects to the senator, one boy saluting the war hero as he passed his flag-draped coffin in the Capitol on McCain's 82nd birthday. After Thursday's memorial service in Phoenix, McCain's body will be flown to Washington, where he will lie in state Friday in the Capitol Rotunda after another ceremony remembering his life and government service. The remembrances continue Saturday at Washington's National Cathedral, where speakers will include former Presidents Barack Obama and George W. Bush. McCain will be buried Sunday at his college alma mater, the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. He died last Saturday after a lengthy battle against brain cancer. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is International Edition. The taught drama Operation Finale revisits history and brings to life the dramatic capture by Mossad operatives of Adolf Eichmann, one of the chief architects of the Nazi Holocaust. Filmmaker Chris Weitz and scriptwriter and historian Matthew Horton offer a dramatic on-screen rendition of the historic events that took place in Argentina 15 years after the end of World War II. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with the cast about the significance of these events in post-war history and their retelling on film today.
We have our guy, Adolf Eichmann,
the architect of the final solution.
After receiving a tip that Adolf Eichmann is hiding in Argentina, Israelis hatch a plan to abduct the architect of the final solution and bring him to justice. At the time, Argentina harbored a sizable number of runaway German Nazis, leaving Israel no hope that an extradition request would be honored.
I would happily put a bullet in between his eyes, but that's not what we're doing here. This is strictly catch and extract.
Eichmann will stand trial here in Israel.
Led by Mossad operative Peter Malkin, an elite group abducts Eichmann and takes him to a safe house. There, Malkin tries to understand the man he saw as a monster.
May I ask you something?
I'm not in a position to refuse.
Is it true you called the camps liquidation machines?
Everyone used flippant terms for dirty work.
Sir Ben Kingsley tells VOA that his depiction of a vulnerable and human Adolf Eichmann is a warning that the most heinous crimes in history are committed not by mythical monsters, but by everyday people. He relates a personal story that has haunted him over the years and informed his decision to take the role.
I was outside an old synagogue with a Jewish journalist, a young woman, and a Hungarian approached us and asked us what we were doing. And we said, we were filming the life of Simon Wiesenthal, to which he replied, "Ach, you Jews, you should just keep quiet, because it never happened. And if you don't keep quiet, it'll happen again. Now work that one out. Work that one out." Absolutely shocking.
Oscar Isaac plays Peter Malkin, a man grieving the murder of his sister and her children by the Nazis, but who treats Eichmann kindly and convinces him to cooperate.
It's almost like Malkin convinced Eichmann of his humanity. You know, the whole thing was about, you know, if we were like you, you'd be dead right now.
As the son of Holocaust survivors, filmmaker Chris Weitz says the story is a personal one.
Because I was raised as a child of somebody who had lost everything to this sort of spasm of national hatred. And so there was a notion that no matter how good things were, things could go haywire down the line. And I think, indeed, a lot of people are waking up to the possibility that if it's not anti-Semitism, it could be anti-immigrant sentiment or various other forms of racism that could totally disrupt society.
At the film's premiere at the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., screenwriter and historian Matthew Horton said Eichmann's trial in Israel was a landmark moment for the Jewish people.
The trial allowed them to grieve. It allowed them that moment of acknowledging what had happened to
Israelis and Jewish people, like, and move on from it, and accepted it happened and moved on. And so even if there are still people, deluded people in the world who believe it's something that didn't happen, I mean, look at where we are. We're in a, yeah, it beggars belief. But that was one of the reasons why it was so pivotal, I think. It allowed for national catharsis.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thank you so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The enduring defeat of ISIS remains a top priority for the United States. The U.S.-led global coalition to defeat ISIS is leading stabilization efforts that consolidate military gains, restore basic essential services, and enable Syrians to voluntarily and safely return to their homes in Raqqa and other former ISIS strongholds. Assistance includes explosive hazard and rubble removal, providing clean water, rehabilitating electricity networks, and other basic necessities. Since April, the United States has elicited approximately $300 million in contributions and pledges from coalition partners to support immediate stabilization and early recovery initiatives in areas liberated from ISIS in northeast Syria, including a generous contribution of $100 million by Saudi Arabia and $50 million by the United Arab Emirates. As a result of these generous contributions and other factors, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert announced the U.S. will redirect $230 million in stabilization funds for Syria, which have been under review. This decision does not represent any lessening of U.S. commitment to our strategic goals in Syria, stressed Ms. Nauert. President Donald Trump has made clear that the U.S. is prepared to remain in Syria until the enduring defeat of ISIS, and the U.S. remains focused on ensuring the withdrawal of Iranian forces and their proxies. We believe, said Ms. Nauert, that neither of these events will happen without irreversible progress toward a political resolution of the conflict, in accordance with U.N. Security Council Resolution 2254. This decision does not affect U.S. humanitarian assistance. The United States is the largest single humanitarian donor for the Syrian response, providing more than $8.6 billion in humanitarian assistance since the start of the crisis for those displaced inside Syria and the region. The U.S. will also continue to work with its international partners towards the achievement of a peaceful resolution of the Syrian conflict under a UN-led political process. The Syrian people deserve a country free of war, human rights abuses, and terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.